अज्ञानमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुर्मिलिता येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रम् अत्र स्वरूपम् रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरूपुरीं माधुरीं गोस्तावतीं राधाकुन्दं गिरिवरं महो राधिकमधावशं प्राप्तो यस्या प्रतीतकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वाञ्च कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्य एव च गीतानं पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमौलिरत्नमालदिति निराजितपदपङ्कजन्ता आजीमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं भरितस्त्वं हरिणं संशयामि। अनारपितचरीं चिरात्करुणायावतीर्णा कलः समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरता सुन्दरा द्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये खन्दरे स्फुरतो वसचिनन्दनः। अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदातु सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलाय तक्षु विश्वाम्बरो द्वयावरो जुगधर्मपालो वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो लादिनी शक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमोऽस्तु ते। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते विशा गोपिका कन्त राधा कन्त नमोऽस्तु ते। राधे वृन्दावनादिष्टे करुणामृतवाहिनी कृपाया निजपादब्जा दस्यं मह्यं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षय क्षिप्तश्च कमादितरङ्गमाद्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। Good morning to all. Pranam. Hoping you had an energizing rest last night. Here we are, another day. And continuing with our morning reflections. Yesterday we were contemplating the reality of the stigmata and all that it means in the life of both Saint Francis and Sri Chaitanya Dev, and also in our lives, how can we relate to the notion of the sacred wound as an opening, as something that can be a portal for love to be poured in and healing to manifest, and so many other things. And today, before our closing meeting, morning meeting tomorrow, I wanted, as I told some of you, to concentrate on the notion of the sacredness of matter and the sacredness of nature, which is something so related to Saint Francis, to Mahaprabhu as well, to the place we are here, And to any place we are, because we are always surrounded somehow or other by material energy. So how to deal with that in a way that is healthy? Which is a topic that I find very crucial to speak about, especially in the times we are living, where we are confronted with a big, also ecological crisis, and a big part of that is due to religion, having posed God as utterly transcendent, very far away, removed from this world. Therefore, what we are left with is a profane matter that becomes an obstacle, that becomes ontologically bad, and therefore we start to treat it accordingly. And no surprise, we have a world collapsing, which is nothing but the opposite of what our Gaudiya Vaishnava teachings give us in connection to how to relate to matter. So matter is not a barrier to God, but it's a meeting place with God. So that will be the main theme today. How can we recalibrate our perspective, as Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say, change your angle of vision, enough, recalculating, do the GPS thing all the times you need till you recalibrate enough, so we can find that matter is a meeting place for God, with God, as Saint Francis beautifully embodied, and Mahaprabhu as well. So I personally very passionate about this topic. I don't think in the Gaudiya tradition this is emphasized enough, and therefore we end up with a very, not only anti-matter approach, but a very disembodied spirituality. Because if matter is bad, whatever seems to be somehow related to matter is bad by extension. So material body is crap, is bad. No? Emotion, psychic matter is bad. So all the emotional things, psychological things, Maya, everything. No? Sleeping, try to sleep as less as you can. Eating, try to eat as less as you can, because all that has to do with matter. It's bad. Sexuality, oh my gosh, let's not talk about it. Right? So we end up stigmatizing all things connected to matter. Why? Because we start with the wrong assumption that matter is bad. So we need to uproot that core misunderstanding. In my case, I've tried to do so also in my books. The last chapter of my two last books are basically all about that. Radical Personalism has a chapter called Unearthing Heaven. So how can we unearth heaven? Heaven below our feet. How heaven is below our feet, not far away somewhere else, but it's as immediate as we think. And the last chapter of Evolution in Divine Love is called The Depths of Matter. Because sometimes we may think of matter is superficial, inert, dead, there is no depth there. We better pay close attention to that. So again, we are in La Verna. We are celebrating both St. Francis and Sri Chaitanya Dev, who are very celebratable for many reasons. And for this reason as well, as we were reading a sign the other day, St. Francis is considered the patron saint of ecology, right? The Ishtadev of ecology in the Christian tradition. So that's very, very interesting. As we were talking yesterday, we'll talk today about the canticle of creatures. He was singing to creation. He was relating to the totality of material existence as family. Mahaprabhu is also singing in the midst of nature and awakening all everything around him to participate in praise and sankirtan. So he's not saying like, oh, this forest of Jarikanda is Maya, I better get away from it. But it's like, oh, everything becomes Udipana. Everything becomes, as we say yesterday, a trigger, a stimulant to divine love, if approached with proper awareness, with proper sambandha. I'm not saying that. Who is saying that? So I'm just quoting local authorities here. Sambandha, relationship. Proper sense of how we are related, interrelated to all of us. So we are supposedly, we are here doing a yoga, practice, right? First day I came here, I was welcome, and they asked me, "Are you the yoga instructor?" And I was like, "Yeah." So we are all supposed to be practicing yoga, right? And yoga, in its deepest form, means to link, to bond, no? Which is very interestingly, is basically synonymous with religion. Religion means religare, relink. We generally do not think of religion and yoga as the exact same thing, but the two are actually speaking about the same thing, the bringing connection, bringing, not bringing relationship, but bringing an awareness to ourselves of the relationship that is already there. So in the case of us and matter, it's important to bring this sambandha, this yoga, this religion, religare, this sense of the bonding that is already taking place. Because we are not entirely separate from anything. We're all interrelated, interconnected. Those are the implications of of sambandha. Because if not, as I say, by contrast, we see matter as bad, as evil. Maya Shakti, material energy, is kind of the devil version of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. We want to run away from this world as soon as possible. Our practice becomes mukti-oriented, evacuation plan into the afterlife. Let me run away from here. It's all about denial. It's all about rejection. It's all about don'ts. No, I start to define my practice in terms of what I do not do. So we become an utterly negative person, right? While, as Srila Siddha Maharaj would like to say, all the Vedic mantras begin with Om. And Om in Sanskrit means yes. So it doesn't mean no. So why you start your whole practice with negative stuff? You have to start with an Om, yes. How to define everything in positive ways? How to redefine everything? Four regulative principles that we think in terms of don'ts, they're all about do's, positive do's. The 10 nama parats that we were sharing recently are not about do not do this, do not do that, because if not, this will happen. It's all about the positive, tending the necessities of love, so and so on and so forth. Because again, if we have a wrong sambandha with everything, if we have a toxic idea with Krishna, that will be very toxic for everyone. Toxic idea about who we are, wrong idea about our own self, dysfunctional to begin with. About the others, the same. About matter, the same. And since everything is interconnected, you have one wrong idea about one, and generally that will affect everything else. So we have to be very careful about getting a proper sambandha, proper sense of relationship. Because again, matter, well, that's the topic of today, it's not bad, it's not dangerous. As we say yesterday, say Vaishnavi of the highest order already serving Bhagavan way better than we are doing it. So we have to get Maya's mercy. Maya in Sanskrit also means mercy, interestingly. We have to get Maya's Maya. Right? So if we approach Maya correctly, Maya will manifest as Maya, as grace. Because it's a greatest Vaishnavi. So we are looking, if we offend, if we criticize matter, we are committing Vaishnavi aparad. You don't want to do that. So again, we may have thought matter is bad. St. Francis didn't think that way. Mahaprabhu didn't think that way, as we will try to see today. And this is also somehow connected to the topic of yesterday, right? Of stigmata, because stigmata has to do with different wounds and markings on the body. No, so the body becomes itself an altar, if you will, no? Marked by these holy brandings. So all this, overpouring of inner realization starts to adorn and mark the body, and the body becomes venerable. In our tradition, the body becomes venerable and spiritualized and completely adorable. So there's nothing against the body unto itself. So we say I think it was the first class, let's just start with the premise that God is in every atom. That's it. Play out the implications of that, and you have no genuine reason to see matter as profane. Every atom is an embassy, right, of the divine. So again, if divine love can mark the body in such a way, the body is like a stage to host, you know, all the things, in the same way that the material world is a stage to host the Lila of Bhagavan, as we were saying the other day. Krishna is coming with his associates over and over again to a planet Earth to perform their lilas. So Mother Earth, Sister Mother Earth, following the canticle of creatures, proves to be a very perfect fitting scenario to for lila to be performed. And our final goal in life is to enter lila. So if lila can be perfectly performed on Earth, technically speaking, one says we don't need to go anywhere. We just need to reach the perfect place inside. No. Let's not have this woo-woo magic thinking that there has to come a mothership that will come and takes us geographically to a certain planet. It's all a movement in terms of consciousness. And yeah, Golok Vrindavan is a planet, but it's a planet made of consciousness. It's a planet made of love. So the movement to that planet, it's in terms of love and consciousness. Sanskrit loka, which translates for planet, also means like a way of perceiving things, interestingly enough. So that's how you reach a new planet. I mean, you can be in hell here on Earth, right? Or in heavenly planets here on Earth or whatever, right? So it's all about movements in consciousness. So for us, spiritual, I will say very sober, healthy start to spiritual life is not, again, escaping the world by realizing that the world is already charged with divine presence, with divine address. Remember, Father Richard Rohr will say, God's address, everyone is like, which is God's address? God's address is everywhere, he will say. Because we generally think it's one street, one number, one bell that I have to ring on, second floor, department 108. That's God's address, hyper-localized. He said God's address is everywhere. Like Prabhupada said, God's Krishna is everywhere, and wherever he is, that's his temple, which is everywhere, because he's everywhere. That's how the Bhagavatam begins very nicely, right? Describing the Vishvarup, the universal form of God. Learn to see the world as divinized. Learn to see every aspect of manifest creation as a limb of the body of God. That's how the Bhagavatam begins. When Parikshit Maharaj asks about something else, and Sukadeva Goswami replies first by speaking about something apparently disconnected, because he wants to make sure first we have the foundation in place. Because Parikshit's questions are more about the highest duty of life and high stuff. And he starts with something which is equally high, but needs to be put into place first. Learn to see the immediate matter as sacred, Vishvarup. And many times in the Bhagavatam, if you pay attention, many of the sessions start with the description of the world as sacred. Just to make a point, so we don't skip that lesson and then miss the whole, whatever, actual lesson that we want to be given. So I always like to quote Vedanta Sutra, Lokavatu Lila Kaivalyam. Lokavatu Lila Kaivalyam means the whole material creation is an output of God's own joy. In Christianity, they have this notion of kenosis. God is emptying his inner self and that appears as the world, which is a similar idea. All this is God's emptying of his heart and pouring it in the form of material creation. In our tradition, we'll say God's heart is overflowing so much that ocean starts to overspill and the sprinkling becomes the universe. So if this material creation comes from the overflowing heart of God, that's sacred. What can be more sacred than that? That the overflowing of love's own heart. Come on. Right? The Vedanta Sutra says, Janmadiya Syajataha. Brahman, the absolute, is he, she, them, it, from which everything emanates. So whatever exists is an emanation from the sacred source. So if the source is sacred and everything is an emanation from a sacred source, everything is sacred. That's a basic math. I'm just giving you math 101 here. The source is sacred. That source is universal. Everything that exists emanates from that source. By Satkaryabad, which means the effect is bearing qualities of the cause. So everything that exists is sacred. The only non-sacred thing is for us not to be aware of the sacredness of everything, basically. So that's our bhakti tradition. Again, we are not a mukti tradition. We are not here after running away from the world, but finding everything right here, right now, and loving it. Again, as Saint Francis did in his own bhakti tradition. I mean, he was a very powerful bhakta. And he saw, as Jamuna was introducing us yesterday, he saw creation as family. Everything is family. Family singing bowl, family bag, family glass, family table, family brother, sister, moon, sun, tree, family curtain, sister curtain. Have you ever embraced your curtain at home, sister curtain? We have to make our own version of the canticle of creatures. He gave a few examples just to warm up. It's not limited to sun, moon, this, that, brother stage. An important thing that this canticle of creatures, and Francis, we were talking yesterday, just is worthy of remembering again, that came at the end of the life, St. Francis' life. That came as a very mature fruit of the very last moments of deep realization he had. He already had the stigmata. And we already talked yesterday how the stigmata came as a result of so much depth and prayer and longing. So on top of the stigmata, so to say, came the canticle of creatures as another layer of blossoming of St. Francis' heart and realization. And as Jamuna was saying, it was not an easy moment for him, so we do not over-romanticize. Oh, he just wrote a nice song about nature, la la la, la la la. He was sick, he was almost fully blind. The situation with his community was complex, as we say. He was bearing the wounds of the stigmata, which, as glorious as it is, brings its own complexity in even practical terms. And in the midst of it all, came the canticle of creatures. So this is important. This matters. He's not singing to creation from naive comfort zone. No? I will sit and look at the sun, brother sun. That came from a deep place of integration of complexity from suffering transfigured by love. From that place, he was able to confirm all the things we are talking here. So that's an important proof. We are talking here without that realization, probably, but someone from that place is telling us, yeah, that's true. That's really true. I'm seeing that having gone through all this. So I'd like to share a brief part of the canticle. Of course, Jamuna shared the whole file yesterday in the WhatsApp group. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's waiting for you there. No need to go to your WhatsApp now, later. But I'll share just a few lines because it's a little, not so long, but I won't read the whole thing now. But just for you to have an idea of the mood, having known from which context this offering emerged, this poetry emerged. He says, "Praised be you, my Lord, with all your creatures, especially brother sun." He's starting from sun and moon and gradually getting down to earth, so to say. "Praised be you, my Lord, with all your creatures, especially brother sun, who brings the day and gives us light." Surya Namaskar, the beginning of the day. Gratitude. "He is beautiful and radiant with great splendor and bears a likeness of you, O Most High." Chaitanya Charitamrita say Krishna Surya Sam. No, Krishna is like the sun. He's saying the same here. Sun is bearing a likeness like you. So we look at the sun and moon. All of this should be Udipan. No? Again, trigger and remembrance of the divine. "Praise be you, my Lord, through sister moon and the star." So again, he's not just praising the moon as isolated phenomena, but it's praising God through everything, right? Which is the vision of the greatest devotees in God, everything and everything in God. "Praise be you, my Lord, through sister moon and the stars, In heaven you formed them, clear and precious and beautiful. Praise be you, my Lord, through brother wind. Yesterday we were really praying for that. I don't know if praising, but praying for that. In Assisi, at one few LAs, there were some wind kind of like... That's as much as we can do our canticle of creatures so far, right? Praise be you, my Lord, through brother wind and through air, clouds, calm, and every kind of weather by which you sustain your creatures. Praise be you, my Lord, through sister water, so useful, humble, precious, and pure. Praise be you, my Lord, through brother fire, by whom you like the night. He's beautiful and playful, robust and strong. In Sanskrit, deva comes from div. Deva means God, but div means to play, also to shine. And so there you have some fiery, playful thing going on. So he's going to the main elements. Praise be you, my Lord, through our sister, Mother Earth. No? It's our mother, but sister. Everyone is brother and sister. Who sustains and governs us and produces fruits, colored flowers, and herbs. Etc. The song continues. I'm just giving you a trailer for you to dive deep by yourself. But what we can, of course, see here very beautifully immediately, he's calling the sun, brother sun. He's bringing sambandha. He's bringing a sense of relationship. It's not just like a planet outside there. Again, yeah, the sun, boom. No, his brother, his family. The moon, sister moon. The wind, it's not just a mere abstract force of nature. It's family, brother wind. No? And even after, I didn't get to that part because that comes at the very end, but he even refers to death as sister death. So everything is encompassed, life and death in family. Even death becomes intimate. No? Because if it's family, ideal family, there's intimacy in family. So we want to cultivate intimacy with the totality of creation, including death, so-called death, of course. Soul is not dying, but there is something called death in one way or another. There are different forms of death. Internally, we have to go through many of them. So hopefully we start to cultivate intimacy with those shedding off and releasing of all layers and masks, outdated sister death. So again, for him, creation is, for Francis, creation is not an object. No? It's not like it's not that, like a resource, no? What I can get from here. Like most of us see creation as something to squeeze and exploit. For Francis, creation is family, which again is very much related to the teaching of our tradition. Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, says the Mahaupanishad. Which is the totality of creation is one family. That's the canticle of creatures summarized in one sutra. No, the totality of creation is one family. We are related to everything. So if I'm related to everything, everyone is my relative. No, related, relative to. No, I'm relative to everything and everyone. So we use the word relatives, no? To use for family people. So everything is my relative. Not only everyone, everything. That's basically the summary of the canticle of creatures. Everything is my relative. No? Curtain is my relative. No? Window is my relative. Each one of you is my relative. Everyone is family. The question is why we do not behave as such. What's getting in the way of family? Generally, we tend to create so many families to begin with. That's a problem. My family is this, and my surname, and my bloodline, and DNA, and my ancestors, and this is the symbol of my family, and yours is different, and this is another country, and this is another town, and this is another planet, and this is another religion, another gender, another color. We compartmentalize reality to the point that everyone ends up absolutely isolated in their own bubble of loneliness. And that's one of the greatest crises that the world is going through today. Everyone is hyper-connected, quote-unquote, more than ever, and everyone is more suffocated in fragmentation and loneliness more than ever. So this type of teachings, as basic as they may sound, are the most urgent and required. How to relate to everything as family. We are all relatives. Let's start treating each other as such. Let's start believing it's true, acting as if that is true. Like once someone asked a psychologist, do you believe in God? And he said, I try to act as if God is real, as if that's true. Like implying it takes time to actually walk the talk. It's not that easy, but let's try to act as if that is true. Because it's true. Francis knows it's true. We may still like, I don't know. Because if not, we will really walk in our talk. So again, Francis not standing above creation and it's as its owner, attaching to everything my, putting his signature below. That's his poverty, right? That's his sense of sacred, holy poverty. That's akinchen, as we spoke the other day. I don't want to own creation. They are my relatives, family. I don't want to own my family. It makes no sense, right? We generally do not say, I own my family, right? My family, although we say my family, so it's a way of owning it, but creation is family. No, it's not my family, it's family. I belong to it, we belong to each other, everything belongs. So Saint Francis is standing within creation as another brother. I'm just another brother along with this bigger family of brothers and sisters. And again, he's realizing the whole creation is participating in praise. When he's speaking about brother, sun, sister, moon, he's realizing all these elements from nature are engaged. He wouldn't say are engaged in Sankirtan. He will say they are participating in the praise of God, which is basically engaging in Sankirtan, in our own lingo, right? Everything is singing the glories of God. Everything, like Thomas Merton, we say, by a tree being a tree, it's giving testimony of the glory of God. Just by the tree being what it is. If we learn to relate to that, that will speak about the divine, because the tree is being what it is, and God is expressing through that. So St. Francis had the eyes to see. Well, he was blind in one sense, but he has the eyes, internal eyes to see. The totality of creation is an ongoing praise at its depth, an ongoing conversation. And that's Sankirtan in another way of putting it. And since we mentioned Sankirtan, of course, we go to Sri Chaitanya Dev, and we have this famous example of him, among others, of how he was traveling through the forest of Jharkhand, and he started to engage in Sankirtan and singing and praising, and the whole of the forest started to join him. Different animals, which by nature will be inimical to one another, like deer embracing the lion and saying, go, Hari Bol. A very Franciscan picture of reality. Tigers dancing, peacocks, whomever, trees, everyone along with Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu feeling we're all doing Sankirtan together. It's not like I'm doing Sankirtan and these guys have been purified by my chanting. It's like family, no? Family. And the spiritual world fully manifested there. The scriptures say in that moment, that was Vrindavan. The fullness of Vrindavan was there at Jharkhand. Which is another important thing, you know, like you can manage the essence of the spiritual realm can be manifested anywhere. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed one of his songs, Golok Vrindavan has manifested in my home. For those of you who think, oh, Grihastha Ashram is some low standard place and you're entangled at home and you have to become renounced and that's the real thing, you may expect that the sannyasi will try to take you out of the dark well of family life. But I'm just reminding you, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, oh, I found Golok at home. So if Golok is at home, you don't need to go anywhere else. Family life can be a dark well, And family life can be Golok, you choose. Monastic life, there is a dark well for monastic life. Dark well of repression and escapism and so many other things. And it can be Golok. Again. Right. So again, in Jarikanda, Mahaprabhu is not like preaching to nature as if nature will be beneath him. As I said yesterday, no, it's not we are trying to engage material energy and purify it by contact with bhakti. Matter is already engaged in service. And by us connecting and offering matter, we are actually being offered ourselves. We are the last ones that need to be offered, at least. So Mahaprabhu is already awakening the song that is already present within nature by his presence. So it's beautiful. On one side, Francis seeing creation as brother and sister and family. Mahaprabhu is in Jarikanda seeing creation as I don't know, like a living field of remembrance. Like everything is to deepen, everything is stimulant. You know, everything in potency is inviting me to absorb myself in Braj. Francis singing with creation, Mahaprabhu is singing or making creation sing and singing with creation, however you like to put it. You know, it's a joint song. No, that's Sankirtan, a joint song. In Christianity, they use this word sacramental, from which the word sacred comes, from sacro. So for Francis, the world is sacramental. It's a place of sacredness, basically. It's an altar. As I like to say many times, it's interesting that in our tradition, when we speak, which is the yardstick to see that level of advancement of someone, and we will speak about Kanishta, Madhyam, Uttam, you can describe the level of advancement is measured to how much you can see God present here. The Kanishta is someone who sees God present only in the altar, in one altar. The Kanishta is someone who only sees one altar. The more you advance, the more you start to see more altars. The altars start to grow. The Madhyam starts to see God's presence in everyone's heart. Okay, now everyone's heart became an altar. Not only my official altar. Now we have 35 altars here, whatever. But then the Uttam is in every atom, the total and the space between the atoms is an altar. It's God's presence. So interestingly, the way to measure advancement in bhakti is how much you can perceive God in creation here and now. So for Francis, again, the world is sacramental. Every creature, everything is praising God. For Mahaprabhu, the world is lila saturated, so to say. Every element can be udipan, can trigger inspiration and divine love. I was shocked once I was reading Sanatan Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is a beautiful book I really like for so many reasons. And at one point there comes one verse that Sanatan Goswami says in this connection. If you relate to a blade of grass, now he's going to the smallest possible example of creation sometimes, using our tradition, a blade of grass, something that we may walk upon thousands of times per day and we don't even notice the existence of the blade. So if you learn to see the blade of grass for what the blade of grass actually is, you can learn, if you learn to relate to the blade of grass for what the blade of grass actually is, you attain all perfection. So he's establishing a new form of sadhana. Grass sambandha. Learn to relate to a blade of grass. If you properly relate to a blade of grass, you will find you can find God in the blade of grass. Because again, it's everywhere. Like blade of grass, not limiting it to a blade of grass, but just going to an example that you may feel like, that's insignificant, that's ordinary. If you learn to see the blade of grass with proper eyes, there you have it. And Mahaprabhu, of course, explained this beautifully. He invoked the example of the blade of grass. But before that, I'm coming to my mind, Mahaprabhu, in his Kumar Lila, when he was a child, there's one nice Lila, you may recall, but he was a little mischievous, like paralleling Krishna's lilas as a child. And he will sit on a pile of dirt. of broken pots and things that will be considered, like ritually impure. If you touch that, you need to take a bath, of course. Mahaprabhu will sit there, and Sachi, his mom, will be like, what are you doing there? Now you have to take a bath. No, you're Brahmin. Brahmins are not supposed to be sitting in impure spots. And Mahaprabhu will give a whole sermon, a non-dual sermon of the absoluteness of everything and Krishna's presence, even in the pile of dirt, which again is very related to what we are talking now. The other day I was in Rome talking with a lady that started coming to our programs, and she's from the Aghori line of Sanatana Dharma. You may have heard about them. But anyhow, the Aghoris, in their own way, try to make the same point by surrounding themselves all the time by what we may consider impure things. So they will go to, in India, for example, to a crematorium and take all the ashes and cover themselves in ashes from dead bodies and have a skull here and do things that will say like, ooh. But for them, it's more about like realizing in a non-dual way this sacred also. No. So Mahaprabhu did his little Aghori trailer as a kid sitting on the teaching. This is sacred. It's not a pile of dirt with the proper eyes. This is sacred. And again, going back to the blade of grass, he gave us the golden Lord, gave us his golden rule in the form of the third verse of Shikshastakam, which begins the first word of the gold, the most important, the first word of the most important thing. The most important person for us ever say begins with grass. Trina. Grass. Oh. No wonder Sanatana Goswami said, if you really learn to relate to a blade of grass properly. And in that, he's using grass to teach us what's the ideal condition to engage in practice in kirtan, kirtaniya sadahari. Learn to see the grass. Basically saying that. He's saying, be as humble as a blade of grass. But indirectly, he's saying, learn to relate to the blade of grass to the point that the blade of grass is teaching you humility. So learn to relate to the grass. Then comes the tree. Learn to relate to a tree to the point that the tree starts to speak to yours, to you as about compassion and forgiveness and tolerance. And in that way, and so on, he gives just two examples, but he could give so many other examples. In that way, you can engage uninterruptedly in practice. So that's the essence of the verse. But there are so many more examples that could be given. The Bhagavatam gives 24 gurus, as you may know, a list of 24 gurus that we can learn from. And we're expecting, now comes the Hindu Brahmin with a big turban and long beard and this or that, so to say, born in this family, and the whole list starts with elements of nature, starts with Mother Earth, first one in the list. We don't have time to go through each one of them. We need a separate retreat for the 24 gurus of Tibet, maybe someday. And of the 24 gurus, as I always like to recall, only three are human. Interestingly, right? Only three are human. All the other 21 are elements of nature. The deer, the bumblebee, the snake, the wind, the sun, brother sun, sister moon, sister snake, brother deer. And then comes three humans to honor the human race. Why not? We do not deserve much honor generally, but sometimes we behave nicely. But the examples he brings even among the humans are special, because one is a child, like a baby, a guru. You can learn a lot from a baby, playful like baby, absorbing the present moment, no masks, no filter, unfiltered baby. The second example is a little girl. Again, not a mature, adult, professional, responsible citizen, human being. And the third one, when it comes to an adult, it's a prostitute. Oops. that's the Bhagavatam pedagogy, right? Let's talk about gurus. 24 gurus. Okay. 21 nature, one baby, one girl, one prostitute. Implying if you cannot learn from all of that, I don't know if you will be able to learn from from anyone else either. So again, nature is not only something to admire. Mahaprabhu's third verse of Sikshastra said, nature is guru. Nature is guru. Let's have a proper idea of guru tattva. Guru is not just this one person that gave me mantra, gave me name. That's the whole guru department of revelation is limited to one body. No. Everything is guru, ultimately. No. Krishna is the original guru. Krishna is everywhere. Guru is everywhere. Nature is guru. Mahaprabhu has shown that he's a universal guru. Krishna himself, Mahaprabhu, acting as a guru. He's Acharya Lila. Pointing to the grass as guru. Pointing to the tree as guru. So, and similarly again, for Francis, nature is guru. He may not be using those terms, but he's learning from creatures. No, he's not just purifying and teaching everyone. He's humbly becoming inspired by them. He's not just loving things sentimentally. He's receiving deep instruction from nature. And somehow creation becomes a whole school of humility. That's where we are living. Ideally should be living a whole humbling school of humility. In our tradition, Krishna says, Radhikar Prima Guru, I'm a Shichanata. Krishna is saying, Shirad is my guru, I'm a student at her school of love. So God himself declares publicly, I'm a student. Yeah, I'm God also, but I'm a student of love, perpetual student of love. Being God is kind of a secondary label. Mostly I identify myself as a student of love. So anyhow, all that to say, matter is sacred. To make a play of words in English, matter matters. Okay? Let's treat it accordingly. Let's revere it. Again, matter is not evil. Matter is Krishna's Shakti. It's a sacred potency. It allows us to offer ourselves. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will give the example of the Arctic plate with all the different elements, incense, lamp, all of these represented the basic elements, water, fire, ether. And we will think, okay, I'm offering these elements to purify them again. No, no. These elements that are matter, that are already serving God, allows me to offer myself through the elements. So I can become prasad. I'm still half-baked. So I can be cooked. I can be, we are the offering. No. Like Krishna says in the Gita, 9:26, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti upaharitam ashnami prayatatmana. Flower, fruit, water, leaf. Like in one sense he's saying, that doesn't matter much. And the implication could be what we are talking about. Flower, fruit, that doesn't matter much because they're already offered. They're already serving me. Matter is already serving me. But the word that comes twice in the verse is bhakti. Like implying, your bhakti is the one missing in the equation. Flower, fruit, that's already, is Maya Shakti material energy already highest Vaishnavi serving me. You are the one missing the party. So Krishna, take our attention. That verse says bhakti, bhakti. Your bhakti, please. That you are the offering. The swaha is about you. It's not about the grain of rice. Like it's not like a like an archery context, like putting the grain of rice in the aim, like shooting the aim of rice, entering to the fire. You have to become offer, enter the fire, be cooked properly, and become a fitting offering. That's the Yukta Vairagya we were talking the other day. Not rejecting the world, not rejecting anything, but engaging. Not so much engaging things in Krishna's service, engaging me through everything in Krishna's service, through everything that is already engaged in Krishna's service, getting the sadhu sangha of matter, the sadhvi sangha of matter, for me to engage properly. So in one sense, the world becomes maya if when we use maya, something bad, illusory, when we see the world apart from Krishna. That's illusion. That's not possible. But the world does not exist apart from Krishna. Just our own lack of vision, our own fragmentation. But the same world becomes spiritual when we see it in relationship to him, when there is proper sambandha. Srila Prabhupada says that, I quote him in Radical Personalism. He's spoken about Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. He's saying basically, it's like the same electricity gives heat and cold. So it's one same energetic department, depending how you relate to it, it's completely enlightened or creates a particular illusion because you're choosing to approach from that place. So as we say, this is a very beautiful place. I mean, sometimes we speak about horrible things happening here, but that's mostly up to us humans that do not know how to relate to things in general. Because Krishna comes as avatar, Mahaprabhu comes as avatar on earth. So in one sense, the divine is bringing heaven on earth. Earth is in itself its own form of heaven. That's the idea. And St. Francis similarly. For St. Francis, he's relating to the world as heaven on earth. He's already finding heaven, which is the world in Christianity for spiritual world. His canticle of creatures, we could say, is like a very bold refusal to separate praise from creation. He's very boldly insisting we shouldn't separate praise from creation. Praise is not just direct to a distant God over there, and creation is like unpraiseable, so to say. So let's not see the world or the earth as a waiting room for heaven. No. In one sense, we could say it's one of heaven's favorite places to appear. Because if not, we are living our life just as a waiting room. Like just waiting for the real thing to happen someday, some other day, some other time, at some other place. And we are never in the present moment. We are never in the here and now. So I like to conclude with one quote that I share as an epigraph at the beginning of the last chapter of Radical Personalism, a quote by Wendell Berry. She says, There are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. But there are no unsacred places. There's only sacred places that we desecrate by not treating them as sacred. Follow the idea? So there is only sacredness and desecratedness, which is us not seeing the sacredness of everything. So the problem is not matter. Again, the problem is desecrated relationship with matter, with everything, with anything. Exploitation, forgetfulness, domination, separate interest, consumption without reverence, without respect. That's what makes the world appear profane. But it's our own profanity thrown onto the world. Our own avidya, as we were talking this day. It all begins with avidya, with a type of blindness, ignorance, that avidya creates dvitya, duality, fragmentation, God here, the world here, I'm here. And we start to relate to things in that fractured, fragmented way. That's fearful, scary. We start to develop defense mechanisms, attack each other, and then we have the world we have. So this, the life and example of Mahaprabhu and the life of the example of St. Francis come to heal, hopefully, that divide inside us to begin with. Again, there's war outside and we should care about it, but we should care about the war. Still, we have the battlefield inside of us where there's so much division. So how to go back into reverent participation, wonderful, awesome participation, proper sambandha. Again, at the end of the day, it's all about proper sambandha and relationship. So before we go to today's exercise, one more line, because then we will have an individual contemplation today based on that. Once I heard from a Vaishnava saying, the whole of creation is a one-word telegram from God to you. Two word. I mean, he said it in Spanish, which is one word in Spanish. I'm adjusting. No. So the whole world is a one word, a two word telegram from God to you, which is love me. No. Or if you want, you can put it the other way. I love you. No. No? So how to see the creation of this telegram, this sutra, saying, telling, I love you and I invite you to love me back. No? How much to listen, to stay close, stay enough with creation to listen to the revelation it wants to give us. So again, Francis heard that telegram, brother, son, sister, moon, the whole world as a family, and all in between. The examples he may not have mentioned, Mahaprabhu sang about it in the forest of Jarikan, sitting on a pile of dirt, seeing a blade of grass as a guru, and all in between of that. So again, now the question is bringing it back home for us, some responsibility, guys, for all of us. How much can we hear that ourselves? Where is the lesson for us? Through this, through our body, through our emotions, through this ground, through this breath, through this earth, through this Laverna, through any other place which is not as beautiful, as fancy as Laverna also, through this world, through everything that happens in this world. How much can we start to develop that vision until heaven is no longer elsewhere? Until we are no longer living like in a waiting room for magic to happen, but heaven becomes something we can recognize right under our feet, so to say, right here, right now. So let me close with one line from my book, Radical Personalism, that I think it's a fitting closing. What I said, the spiritual world is to first be gradually attained and experienced right here on earth. We start to arrive there here now. Here or nowhere at all. It begins here or nowhere at all. And now I make a play of words that I can only make in English again. It is, we use the word nowhere. It is now here or nowhere. You can make a tattoo of that if you want. You were thinking about it. I was seeing the face. Right? So it is now here or nowhere. It's up to you. Okay. So I'll share with you an exercise that we'll be doing to share to close today's meeting. As we have been doing these days, we'll be doing in groups of three. I'll see if everyone is here and we can do actually in groups of three. If not, we'll adjust accordingly. So I'll give you the prompts. Yeah, I will be repeating them with a microphone and singing bowl and all my paraphernalia. So in groups of three, again, each person will take a turn to speak for 2 minutes. The rest of the group bearing witness, listening with empathy, without interrupting, without advising, without trying to anything. Listening, being present. So the first prompt, there are two prompts, not three, two this time. First one is, where in my embodied earthly life, where in my embodied earthly life do I tend to forget, where in my embodied earthly life do I tend to forget that God can be met there? Where in my embodied earthly life do I tend to forget that God can be met there? No? For example, in my body, my emotions, my food, my rest, my sexuality, nature, grief, work, daily routines, relationship, you name it. I'm just giving examples. That's part one. Part two, I will remind it later, but I mention it. In response to that, of course, where do I tend to forget? Part two is, what will change if I relate it to that place, or to that thing, or to that whatever, as sacred? What will change if I relate it to that place as sacred, rather than as something problematic or separate from God? What will change if I relate it to that place or situation or thing as sacred, rather than as something problematic or separate from God? Okay, those are the two prompts. I'll stop the recording first here. Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Sri San Francis Ki Jai, Material World Ki Jai, Maya Shakti Ki Jai, Gaur Premanand.